Well.
We are back at camp. We have some awesome guests here today. Who we got, Travers?
Who do we have here? To the left of me right here is my young brother, Daniel Stravers. And who do you have next to you, Ryan?
We got Slade. And I can't pronounce his last name, but it's Slade.
Echeverria.
Echeverria.
And now, this is Ann Arbor. We've got Ann Arbor in the house.
Hell yeah.
What's up?
Hello.
What's up?
Let's go.
Thanks for having us at camp.
Yeah, this is Ann Arbor's first time to camp, correct?
Mm-hmm. True.
Yes.
How does it feel so far?
Feels great. I got a cup with cats on it, so I'm freaking stoked, dude.
Is there anything in there? You hiding anything?
Yeah, don't. Yeah, it's secret.
Don't look. It's not in your business.
It smells a little strong there.
Yeah, I like it straight up, you know?
Yeah, with the kittens. Dude, this is fun. I'm excited we're doing this. I feel like we probably should have done this a very long time ago.
Yeah.
Yeah, a lot of people don't know that these guys are brothers, like kind of everywhere we go, because there's just like so much relation between all of us together and the bands and stuff.
I know.
So
yeah.
Getting it together, it's like, oh, they're brothers. It's great.
We have history. Like, I remember
Dan's
way back
been on
in the
podcast
playing
before.
Brophy with you guys. And, like, yeah. We'll get into a bunch of cool stuff, but there's a...
Dan is known to some of our listeners on the podcast, not only because he's my little brother, but there is also... As a victim of the shower curtain story. Have you heard of this? Do you know what we're talking about?
Yes. Yes, I do. Yeah. Yes. I've heard that you traumatized him.
Make
bro.
A long story short for anyone that just needs to get caught up, so... It is one of the great camp stories here that we do share around the campfire sometimes.
It's epic.
I wiped my butt on the shower curtain at the age of 6 years old, blamed it on my little brother, and my mom believed it.
Yeah. She didn't know you guys had different smells yet?
I don't know.
Did your mom smell your brother's poop?
Yeah, she'd be difference? Like, no, that's Eric. That's Eric. So that like, definitely smells like Eric.
You guys, she's driving, you guys are in the back seat, and someone shit their pants like... Yeah. Definitely Ryan.
Right. That was a Ryan one.
Definitely Ryan.
A lot of nicotine in that one.
At the age of 4, you were ingesting nicotine pouches.
Just a few years later. 12.
Yeah, man. We got Ann Arbor on the podcast today, and we go way, way back, dude. And I kind of want to take it there. I want to take people back.
Let's take it back to the beginning.
So this is what I remember about Ann Arbor. So first, you were called Troop 101, correct?
Correct.
Now, the first show that I ever played was at St. Andrew's Catholic Church for a battle of the bands, which my band, The Evade,
yes,
was playing a battle of the bands, and Troop 101 was one of those bands. You guys beat us. I'm still actually mad about it.
I was going to say, who
and
won?
And the reason I brought you guys on the podcast today is to confront you.
Do you remember who
I
was?
I still believe The Evade should have won. But we didn't. In Troop 101, I think you guys, I think we tied with you guys or something.
I think there was like a weird tie thing going on.
There was a weird tie thing, but either you beat us or we tied. But I think...
Do they know about The Evade though? Like the music and stuff like that? Like,
I don't think so. We were like screamo, like, you know, angry.
Yeah, it was intense.
It was intense.
It was intense, but Austin, I mean, it wasn't bad. It was just like...
And at the time, you were really good friends with Austin Vanderburg.
Yes. Was he the singer?
He was our singer. Screamer.
Screamer.
He sang too, but mostly screams.
Scream, yeah.
Calvin, my good friend Calvin, was the guitarist. And yeah, it was the first show I ever played was that Battle of the Bands.
It's crazy.
And you were on that show too. So how old were you? 14. 14 years old.
Yeah.
Dude, that's crazy that that's a job that like, there's like, oh, like what do you do for a living? It's like, I'm a screamer.
I'm a scream.
I scream better than most people can scream and people pay me a lot of money to scream. That's nuts.
I mean, yeah. I kind of is like, you'll like be scrolling and you'll see these like people doing tutorials on how to scream. I'm like, oh, I mean, I guess it is like, kind of like technique.
Well, there is a correct way to scream so you don't hurt yourself, right?
Yeah.
I remember Andy had these.
Wait, do it real quick.
There's that vocal lesson, the lady that doing the vocal lessons of metal. I forget what it's called, but it was like this metal girl teaching you how to like sing correctly and not destroy your voice. But I have to look it up.
I can only imagine like the you know what's going on with those screamers and their voice. If you don't know how to like properly do it, I'm sure you're just gonna tear your voice up. So.
Yeah,
yeah. I can't like talk for a whole night, and then the next day my voice hurts.
Even after a show with us, like I'm like my get a little quiet because I just did like an hour worth of singing. So I'm like, hey guys, So I can't imagine just puking in a mic.
I know it's gotta or like when you're sick. on tour?
Oh, that's the worst, dude.
You're sick on tour. You have a sinus infection. You have to scream for an hour and a half.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Or like your stomach hurts. Like you're like nauseous and you're just like, I got to go scream with my entire body right now.
Yeah, no.
You can't like half-ass
scream.
What if
you're like becoming really zen, you're doing yoga, but then you have to like go scream, but you're not really even mad anymore. You're just like really...
You already got the angst out.
What if you're like in a really good mood and good place in life and like everything's going great and you have to scream every night?
That's when you get kicked out of the band. Cause
you need something crazy to happen. When we were younger, Andy used to do this thing where he would tell all of us repeatedly that metal music isn't music. He'd like hear like one of our friends' bands that are in like a metal band, like very big. He's like, this shit's garbage. It's not even music.
This isn't music.
I never had a metal phase, I will say. I've never been into the metals. I did get a bad haircut once and then I was just seen for like 4 years, but I never
that
got
counts.
Into the music. Yeah.
That counts.
So people thought you were metal.
Yeah.
You just got labeled, dude.
So yeah, Tony and Guy by accident. Didn't know what they were about.
I get consistently mistaken for a metal guy. Like constantly people come up to me and they're like, dude, did you go to that show last night? Like Bleeding Lambs or something like that, you know?
You look like a Dream Theater fan, I would say.
Bleeding Lambs.
I don't know. It's usually something about lambs and Satan and blood.
They do have the best band names of all time.
They really do.
Yeah. When did you start Ann Arbor?
Ann Arbor was started in 2003. Yeah, in a garage in Ahwatukee.
So was that eighth grade?
That was...
I'm trying to do the math here. I'm not that great at math.
I don't even know, but like...
That's seventh or eighth grade.
Sixth grade, seventh grade. Yeah, we're right there, like right around that time.
Yeah, so I remember seeing Adam around that time. We're like 13 or whatever. I remember seeing Adam at the skate park.
Mm-hmm.
And I met him at the skate park, and he told me he was in a band.
Yeah.
And he ended up being in your band. But the first thing I remember about you was you guys were the first band that really kind of started doing anything. Like actually like traveling... touring and it was like when we were in high school.
Yeah,
so I knew you as the kid that was like, I thought you were so cool and like mysterious and like so all mysterious. The girls like Slade and Austin was like kind of jealous of you because like your band was like, you know, doing some shit.
I mean dude it was a lot of work to get there, but yeah, like that was cool.
All the girls to think you're hot.
To get all the girls, dude. I had a pretty hot girlfriend in high school, so I was pretty proud of that. But
I just remember
I
just remember my perception of you in high school was like, oh damn, Slade's tight. Like I just thought you were really cool. I just want to get that off my chest.
And now look at me. I'm just
you still are. No, dude, you're the best.
When did it start to feel like you guys were actually starting to do stuff? Because like out of nowhere, like you guys' song was on like every MTV show. You guys were on an MTV show, which I want to talk about later. But like, was there like a time where you like felt that everything was ramping up and things were?
Yeah, we would like leave on the weekends to play shows in like California and like wherever kind of we could just for a couple days. And we kind of started to gain traction in Phoenix first because...
How old, like, when this is happening?
Like probably 15.
Yeah.
Back in the day, Tim Harmon was, like, a huge promoter in Phoenix and was putting on shows with, like, Scary Kids Scaring Kids, Slutto Formal. I mean, all those bands. Goodbye Tomorrow.
I remember Scary Kids playing at our high school.
Greeley Estates was another one. But they, like, had the same type of shows, but they were doing, like, these huge shows and all these kids were showing up. And eventually, we met with Tim and he's just kind of, like, had some faith in us and threw us on some shows. And at that moment, you know, we started playing like sold out shows and we were like, oh, this is awesome. And then after that, started getting a little bit of traction in Arizona. The shows in California, we started getting labels to come out. So once that started happening, it was like, I feel like we're gaining some traction. We're actually getting somewhere, you know? And then basically we signed, they threw us on the road and we toured for a long time.
I remember probably like junior year of high school, you guys being gone. Like you came back to Corona in junior year, right?
Yeah. Yeah. I finished out high school, but like right after that, we just hit the
road. I remember you were sometimes gone from school though, because you're on tour. And I remember being like, God, that's so sick. Like, I want to go on tour.
Yeah. It was, dude. I'm surprised my parents let me do that, dude.
Yeah.
Just like in high school, letting them, like, we would just take one of their trucks and drive out.
What was the first big tour you guys did? Who was that with?
Oh, man.
It was with,
like, big tour was like Take Action Tour was like a big one for us. But I'm trying to think like the bigger tours. We were doing like such small, like five people to the venue tours at the beginning, dude. It was it was rough. Yeah.
Well, no, the first big support tour you guys got. I forget what band it was with, but I remember it was in high school.
Cute is what we aim for?
Yeah, cute is what we aim
for. So that was the take action.
Okay, cool.
That was the take action. And we were signed to Hopeless. Hopeless puts that tour on. So we kind of, that was kind of our shot to like really hit it. And it was sick.
And then that led to getting like Warped Tour and stuff, right?
Warped Tour. And
what was that like?
Zoomies Festival. Warped Tour is a trip, dude. Warped Tour is
because we
like,
never, Catastrophe never got to do Warped Tour.
Yeah.
At one point, it was on the table.
Yeah.
It was like, I think it was the last or second to last year that Warped Tour actually happened. It was like a possibility. I remember it was funny because like we had seen the main do it or you guys do it and other bands do it. And we had heard stories of like how grueling it was.
Yeah.
And there was a part of us that was like, do we even want to do Warped Tour?
Yeah.
And we were starting to get talks about us possibly doing it. We were like, shit, I hope we don't have to go to Warped Tour.
It's a brutal experience because, I mean, for us, we got our way in kind of slowly. So we were doing like a week or, you know, it would come one year, we'd do a week. The next year, we'd do a couple weeks. And then the next year, we'd do the whole thing. So we kind of eased our way into it. But the first 2 years that we did the week and then the 2 weeks, we did it in a van. And so driving, you know, on the West Coast in a van with those shows is like, you're trying to follow a bus tour and it's just almost impossible. And they're switching your sets up every day, so you don't know when you're going to play until that morning. So you have to make it to that city because you might be opening the stage. So,
and if you're opening the stage, you're basically right when you get to the city.
You're unloading your shit.
You're sound checking. You're playing.
There's no break. You know, there's no food stops. Like you got to go straight there. So
every night on the West Coast
is an overnight drive because you're literally following the buses and they've got the hired drivers. They don't care everybody's sleeping. So
that sounds like our first Dirty Heads tour. It was like we missed two shows on that tour because of getting stuck in traffic or
just not
being able to keep up with
having
the bus.
To sleep.
Yeah.
Yeah. Trying to get some sleep. I mean, dude, we were sleeping in parking lots. We were doing whatever we could. And then after you play or before you play, whatever it is, you hustle the lines. We would be in lines with CDs and listen to our song, you know, to people and, well, what time you guys play? We play and then they'd meet you at the stage. And that was kind of like the snowball into getting the people to come. But it's just like such a bittersweet thing, the whole tour itself, because you're in like literally a village of just bands and there's no real rules. It's not like there's police walking around me like, hey, don't do that. You know, you could do whatever you want. And some of these guys they're just crazy, man.
So, yeah, I bet you saw a lot.
I mean, a lot of drinking, a lot of crazy stuff going on. But
yeah,
it's a good time. And you gain a shitload of fans. I mean, every day we were playing in front of hundreds of kids, but the trade-off is the stage switch off, right? So you're sound checking while this band's going on this side, but then this band could be a metal band. And then my band that goes next is a pop band. So then all these fans for the metal band start getting ready to watching them play while we're sound checking. They're just like, fuck you guys, fucking pussies. And we're like, man, we're just here to play the show, man.
Like, did you have any shows like that?
Of course.
Like you're actually getting like fucked with?
Dude, I remember one in particular where it was either right before or right after Stick to Your Guns. And like the singer of that band is just like super motivating. He's always making speeches and it's cool. It pumps the kids up. But like these fans they were not fans of us. For some reason, I don't know, they knew we were a pop band, but they're just like, fuck you guys. No, stick to your guns. You know, and the other band was like, man, we're just here to play the show. It's not like we set up the set list. So that's like the trade-off is all the different types of bands that are on Warped Tour.
But I'm sure that actually will work in your favor more than it wouldn't, because then it's like forcing people like, so I don't know, at any music festival like I go to, I'm usually dragging somebody that's never heard the band to the thing, and then they might be a fan of you.
Yeah.
Instead, I don't know. There's always like half the crowd like, kind of like, I don't know what's going on here.
Yeah,
there's totally, so many different types of music.
It totally just like spreads. Yeah, and that's the thing. It's like Warped Tour is great because there were so many types of genres of music, and you didn't like this band, you can go to the other stage and watch a band that was, you know, type of music you like. It was cool. It was definitely cool. I mean, I don't want to talk any smack on it because I loved it, but
no, I mean, from all the bands I know that have done Warped Tour, it like definitely helped the, you know, their career and just overall. Yeah. I think having, especially when Warped Tour was popping and it was like the thing, having that under your belt as an artist in a band was kind of like a badge of honor in a way.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Because it was hard, dude.
Yeah, it's hard.
Especially if you're not a band that, you know, is on a big bus and you have, you know, if you're not playing main stage. And
yeah, I mean, that's
even
another
thing. Did
you guys
play main stage a couple times?
We played it a couple times, and that was when they were bumping the bands up randomly from different
stages.
That
must have been pretty epic.
Oh, dude, it was so epic.
I remember seeing a photo a long time ago of you guys playing main stage and being like, damn, that's wild.
It was crazy.
It was a big amphitheater. I forget where it was, but
you don't find out, like I said, until the morning. So we're all in our bunk sleeping, and like our TM comes in. He's like, hey guys, you're on main stage. You're first up. Let's go. And we're just like, oh,
like
shit,
Santa
today.
Just dropped off.
Yeah, it's like, it's today. Awesome. But like, that stage, there's just kids that just wait. They don't go anywhere else. They just wait at main stage. And so you always have a fat crowd and they always want to get crazy. So
yeah,
it was cool.
And it was easy. I always liked about when like our friends would go on Warped Tour is they become friends with all these bands that were just completely
missing.
It's like they're like, oh yeah, we're friends with like G-Eazy and then also this band from Japan now. And you're just like, oh, that's sick.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
It just seemed like a really, everybody on the tour was kind of like, not everybody was a community, but it was just like, it kind of exposes a lot of different things to a lot of different people.
Yes, absolutely.
Well, a lot of big, even like pop stars and stuff started with Warped Tour. Like, didn't Katy Perry do Warped Tour? Eminem did Warped Tour.
Yeah, dude.
A lot of artists you'd think would not be like a Warped Tour band have like done Warped Tour.
Yeah. I remember seeing Katy Perry. That was like the year that we did the 2 weeks and we did like a couple of days with Katy Perry and she was on a small stage, dude. And the people, I had never seen such a big crowd for like one of the medium stages, you know, it was crazy. That's and that was cool. Like right after her and Travie McCoy broke up and they were on Warped Tour too or
Travie,
something.
There
was something weird with the Gym Class Heroes and her and it was, yeah. It
well,
was
okay. So not, I don't want to spend too much time on this, but Gym Class Heroes are like kind of a reason why Kadastro started because.
Really?
In a
because you love Travie McCoy.
None of us ever like really liked or listened to Gym Class Heroes, but Pat Kirch put it in Andy's brain that he should start a band because Gym Class Heroes were doing well at that time.
Yeah.
And they had just popped off with that cover they did with Fall Out Boy singer. And so Andy was like, all right, I guess I have to start a band because Pat's telling me I should get a band. And so Andy called me and was like, can you play drums in my band I'm starting? Like, I want to start a band. I thought he was kidding, you know what I mean? But anyway, it's just kind of funny, like Gym Class.
No, that's
like,
actually...
I remember they were big at that time.
That's a cool story, actually.
Yeah, it's kind of funny.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cool.
Dude, I remember Gym Class Heroes did a tour with RX Bandits, which is like such a weird...
No way. I feel like RX fans would hate them.
They hate
yeah,
it.
I would feel yeah, like that's yeah. weird. I mean, I love... That would be cool to see them both together, I suppose. But I mean,
yeah. That was one of the only RX tours I miss, and everybody's like, "Dude, it was all bros. It was just all bros for Gym Class Hero, and then like weirdo heroin addicts for RX."
So, what year? Maybe I want to talk about how my brother got into the band, but what led up to that? I guess.
So let's see
what happened in between that period.
I think maybe 2012. I could be wrong. But we were going to do Warped Tour. We jumped on a conference call. The other guys were like, hey, we don't want to tour anymore. We don't want to do this. We're done. We're done touring.
All say that to you at the same time? Like they had already had this conversation and came to you and said like...
It's possible, but the way that it sounded on the phone was more of like, yeah, I agree. You know, I'm kind of burnt out. You know, the other ones agreeing. And it was like, in the moment, it's like, okay, well, I guess I agree too. But then after you think and then you have, you know, your manager's like, you can't cancel Warped Tour. That's just going to put a bad taste in people's mouths, especially, you know, Kevin who puts it on. And so I was like, well, I'm not going to do it by myself. And so we talked for a long time, went back and forth, and I finally found like a super team to get it all going. But after that, I got them together. We played Warped Tour and then we did Australia Warped Tour. And then I was like, I'm taking a break. I'm taking a personal break. I don't know if the band will keep going. I didn't know what I wanted to do. And then I think, what year did you jump in?
16.
So 16. So I might have played a little bit more time in between, you know, 2012 and 14. But there was a couple years that I did stop. And then the demand was high and Adam wanted to join back in. And we needed another guitar player. And I had known this guy. And I talked to you about it, I think.
Yeah, well, I think Adam reached out to me.
Yeah,
Of you guys reached out to me and asked if I knew anyone that played guitar that could maybe be in Ann Arbor. And I immediately was like, my little brother is a shredder.
Yeah.
And so Adam was like, does he have anything he's recorded? Like, can I see him play? And so I called Dan and I was like, hey, you need to record a bunch of crazy guitar shit, put it on a SoundCloud link and send it to me. And so he sends me that. He did it right away.
Right then.
just like prove that he can shred.
Yeah, yeah.
Or like probably had some, did you have some stuff in there that you had previously recorded too, maybe?
No, I think I just took a bunch of random like beats or songs that I had written or something and then just, I don't know, shredded over it.
Yeah. And so I called Adam. I was like, dude, I'm telling you, my little brother's fire. Like, he's such a good guitarist. And so I send him the SoundCloud link. He listens to it. And then what?
I think what you happened? And Adam met up, right?
Yeah. I went and met up with him at, I think at like the place that he was working at. some like bar or restaurant.
Hillside?
Hillside.
Yeah, Hillside, Nawatuki, and then
is that where we go?
That's where we have
catastrophe
meetings there sometimes.
That place is bomb, man.
Because Gonzo lives right over there, so we'll sometimes go have meetings there.
Yeah, so I don't know. So I met up with him, and I thought there was going to be some sort of like, all right, learn these songs and then do like a audition or I don't know. And then it was really just a short conversation.
He was like, damn, you're actually better at guitar than me. I'm not a weirdo.
It's like you're hot.
Sorry. What'd you say?
I think he just wanted to make sure I wasn't like a weird dude, you know, which you kind of need to do before you take somebody on a tour with you and spend every waking moment together. So
in high school, we had a class together and you were kind of weird. I had to give him, you know, a heads up. No, I'm just kidding.
That's how you guys first met in high school?
Yeah. My freshman year. We had cooking foods class
together. I was a senior though. Was that?
No, you were a junior.
I was a junior.
And I was a freshman. Yeah, we had cooking class together.
Danny's hair is all spiked out.
We're in the same kitchen.
Oh, I forgot about that.
Bring the spike back.
Bleach tips. So what happened? You jam with them for the first time? What's the deal with that?
What was it? No, once you gave me like the okay, I think you guys gave me a set list or half a set list and I started learning some songs. Then you and Adam came over and
we just did
like an acoustic run through of a handful of songs. And then you just gave me the rest of the songs and I just figured them out. And then what was it? Kyle was drumming?
Yes.
Kyle Rogers.
Drumming.
Yeah.
Because we did that. That was your first year was with Amorosa, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. So... That was
the first time he went on like an actual tour.
That was when we released the Astronaut, the self-titled Astronaut record with the way. And Can't Help It was on that. So we had just come out with that.
And fun fact, our listeners, some of them know who Matt Keller is because Matt Keller has produced and helped mix last like 5 Catastrophe records. Yeah. He did that album with you guys, correct?
Yes. Shout out to Matt Keller. Did that record. Love Matt.
Which
Keller.
Matt's one of your best buds too.
Oh yeah. Love Matt. Yeah, so that record, when we did that, Greg, our old drummer, decided to, when he called me, hey, I want to be back in, you know, I promise it'll be fine. It's like, okay, you have to promise me they're going to do a tour. I promise I'll tour because we're probably going to get a tour. Okay, well, we get a tour, boom, he drops out. So then I lose Greg a second time and I have Adam back in. So we brought in Danny and then we had Kyle. Kyle, he played for Downtown Fiction. He's a drum tech now for...
Anderson Paak.
And Walk the Moon. Epic. Walk the Moon, too.
Kyle's a shredder.
Yeah, he's a shredder. A
great drummer and funny ass dude.
So funny.
He's hilarious. Oh my God.
That's where we got Baby Joker as his nickname. Yeah. And that's where we got Baby Joker from. Another story. Anyways,
that's
go
awesome.
Ahead. Sorry. So you joined, and then that was your first like tour, right?
Yeah.
Amorosa?
When did Let the Games Begin come out? Because I feel like in my memory, like that's when you guys like really started.
Yeah,
taking off.
That came out with like our. It was on Free Your Mind, I think, and that was like our first EP with Hopeless. So they were like really pushing it, and for some reason, on that same, I think EP is when Scooby Doo Cartoon Network came to us, and they were like, "Hey, we want you guys."
When you guys did the Scooby-Doo.
To do the theme song, and we were like, "Okay," and they're like, "We also want you to do original," and we were like, "That's why us," you know? Like, yeah, so weird.
But so you guys did the theme song for Scooby Doo.
Yeah, so we did an original.
You guys also had a sync on. A foot like ESPN or something, didn't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, Let the Games Begin. Yeah, that was on like MLB and some, you know, right before the Super Bowl or something. Yeah.
So sick.
Jersey Shore.
It was on Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then
it still plays sometimes. I'll be watching TV and I'm like, what the hell?
Snooki's a big Ann Arbor fan.
I hope so.
what was Silent Library like?
Oh, that was a crazy experience. So our manager at the time,
I remember when you did that.
David got us that gig, and a bunch of like emo bands were doing it, like work tour bands were doing it, and basically we got asked to do it. And dude, it was so weird because they like give you a big talk before you go on, and like, okay, this is a real show. You know, there's gonna be cameras, all this stuff. You do have to be quiet. All the money you win, though, you do get at the end.
Okay.
So we were like, cool, and they're like, there's a table. Here's how the game works, and then when you go on, it's like. it's, I feel like it's not as funny. You kind of like forcing it out, right? Because yeah. all this stuff's happening, like slapping the table. But I mean, by the end of the day, like it was pretty good because you watch it back and like I got thrown through a door.
Yeah.
And like, and like, I don't know. There was just some crazy, crazy times. And like, it's fun to look back on for sure. But dude, that was a crazy experience. We talked to the Asian guy at the end that, and he's like, oh yeah, you know, I do side gigs on the side and I do acting and stuff too. If you guys ever need somebody in your music video, let me know. And I was like, this is so weird, dude. Yeah. Like, you're on Silent Library.
I remember seeing that. I'm like, holy shit. Because it's just like, you guys are on ESPN, Scooby-Doo, and like all these, like, there's so many things where like your music was everywhere. I was like, damn, they're fucking doing it.
Yeah, they were pushing us hard, dude. And that Scooby-Doo thing was cool because they were like playing us at the movie theaters. I had friends would text me and be like, yeah, I'm here to see, you know, Lord of the Rings or whatever. And there's an ad for Scooby-Doo and your guys' song just came on. And I was like, what the hell? You know, we didn't know any of that was going on.
Yeah.
That's so sick.
It was cool. Yeah, it was really cool.
That's crazy.
Damn. All right. So Baby Joker joins in.
Yeah.
And you guys were, how many albums have you done together now?
So we've done the full length that came out, what, 2022? 22. Love and Drugs.
22.
And then two EPs,
mm-hmm.
two or three EPs.
The EP and
Tangerine.
Tangerine. Uh-huh.
Yeah.
And then this new one that we're working on.
Yeah, and this new one.
We have one coming out, yeah.
Oh, yeah. So you guys are working on a new album right now?
Yeah. Well, we kind of ripped Catastro's idea with like the whole Bones thing and stripping it down. And we kind of took that and spin it our own way and did that thing. We're actually doing it with Stravers, so
nice. It's turning out really sick
at the camp, it is
camp
it is.
Studios
so they've been recording at camp,
yeah,
and it's been turning out sick, dude. I'm really excited for people to hear those songs because they're like flipped in a different way too.
Yeah, it's just, you know, basically, I mean, like we have a bunch of songs, so we've never done this, so we just,
it's like your greatest hits acoustic,
basically our most listened to songs, and
nice. Boom,
yeah, and redid them, so we'll see how it turns out.
Hell yeah. So you're a dad now, two?
Yes.
Two?
Three.
How
is, yeah.
Three. How has that changed like your views on touring and wanting to, I know it's got to make a big shift. Because that happened around the pandemic kind of, right?
Yeah, right around the pandemic. And it's definitely, you know, shifted my life. I'm definitely a busy guy and it's harder to do stuff that I want to do or like the band wants to do. Mm. I don't know. I think that it's coming in, you know, waves, and I think, you know, it's not going to be like this in a couple of years. I'll have more time opened up, but you know, at the moment I'm trying to soak in my family and be with them as much as I can. But when it comes to touring, I mean, it'd have to be something pretty big for me to kind of drop it and kind of go do that. But I'm down to play shows and festivals, and especially the way with, you know, how the music industry is today, not you don't necessarily have to tour that much anymore, you know. It's completely flipped. So
I would assume too, like, because your kids are so young, do you think that there's something to where, like, you know, I feel like when they're at that young of an age, they're just never going to be that young again. So missing, if I was a dad and had really young kids, I'd be really afraid to miss those years.
Yes.
Because it's one of those things that you just don't get it back.
You don't, man. Yeah.
I subbed in and played drums for you guys last year for a show. I think.
Yeah.
I think it was last year.
Yeah. Yeah. I like Crescent.
And you had, you know, your kids there, and just seeing you interacting with them, being in the green room, seeing that made me think like, dude, I don't know how I could tour if my kid was just at home. Like,
on the other hand though, it's like everything you're doing is for your family too. And it's still you, and like that's how you,
and if that's the way you make your money,
exactly,
for sure.
If it's financially, you know, if it makes sense financially, then sure, let's go. But if it's taking a big risk, you know, it's right, it's, you know, it could fail, and then what, you know?
Your kids are also adorable.
Oh, thank you.
And
thanks. They love,
but they're gonna be people someday.
Totally.
So you have to enjoy it before they become actual people.
Yes. And they, like, literally every week is different. Like, they're growing so quickly, and they're saying new things, and like, it's just even me going to work and coming back, like, homie's got a new word. He's saying a cuss word today. I'm like, cool, that works. Whatever, you know. It's like, it's cool to see them grow up. So yeah
that's sick, dude. Yeah, it's crazy.
It's hard. Yeah, it's definitely hard to.
It's just kind of like changes perspective, where it's like, for me, I love playing shows and I love doing that. So I don't see myself ever like not ever stopping that all the way. But like, there's so many things just growing up and your life changes and it makes everything else look differently.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is your relationship like now versus like maybe, you know, 10 years ago before you even had any kids or like responsibilities like that? What is your relationship with like what success means? Just in general, it doesn't have to be like success as an artist.
I mean, it depends on where you are in your life, right? Like now my success to me is watching my family grow up, being with them all the time, making them happy, being able to support them, making progress with the band, making sure we're staying busy. We're always putting music out, you know, just trying to keep the ball moving and everything makes me happy, makes me feel like I'm busy, makes me feel successful. If you were to ask me that probably 10 years ago, I would say, you know, getting the band huge, touring all the time, you know, it's completely shifted. So
yeah, man,
it just depends.
It's just cool to ask because I think there's a lot of parallels with like what me and Ryan have gone through losing Andy.
Yeah,
and then
absolutely.
Like being able to step back, zoom out on your life. Because for so long, my vision of overall success was just linked to the band. And now it's like being able to zoom out further and realize it's more than just being successful in music or what you're doing as a career. But yeah, those other areas of your life that are really meaningful and important.
My perception has totally changed of just like more now. Before it was definitely like, you know, make more money, be a bigger fucking band and
exactly
the kind of stuff. And now it's been more like, how do I fit as much things that I really enjoy doing into a day? Like if I can make my life just making music and fucking fly fishing, like that's all I want to do. And I think I can do that. And so it's like that is success. I don't need all the stuff that I thought I needed. And so it's like, yeah, I don't know. It definitely, it's a lot of like growing up and also just having that whole switch of stepping back and not being able to play shows and looking at things differently. It's wild.
It is
growing up. And like, you know, this is kind of a tangent, but just like when we started our band, when you guys started before us, it's like the music industry has completely shifted.
Yes.
It's 100% different. And it's like the MySpace days where bands were, you know, it's like bands were making a shitload of money. They're still spending, you know, $1 million on music videos and stuff back then.
It's like,
and now it's changed so much with TikTok and just like, how do you get 1 minute out there to the most people? And then how do you ride that wave if it happens or if it doesn't happen? Does it matter? It's like, what have you noticed, I guess, or like adapting? Because I always feel like I'm getting so old. And there's all these new things. There's always a new app. And I'm I'm not, like, I don't want to do another social media.
Slate and I always have this conversation.
I'm failing, dude. That's the answer, is at least for me, dude. Like, I have a hard time even finding time on my phone to, like, scroll for a long amount of time into something that I, like, I can't get into a rabbit hole because I'm always being distracted by something.
Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah, I don't, it's just.
We always have this conversation about how, like, everything's evolved so much and changed to like where we're like, we got into music to play music and not to be content creators.
Yeah.
So it can be really frustrating because there's all these different people telling you what the right path or what you're supposed to be doing. And it's trying to figure that out while still like maintaining the essence of the band without just being like, all right, we need to set up our phone on a tripod and like pretend play or whatever, you know, all these things. So we are working on that and trying to find like a new way. I've been getting into a lot of like videography stuff and we're going to try to start doing some like artistic content or something, almost like mini music videos or something, because even music videos are like you said, like it's not such a thing anymore. And even if you put out the dopest music video, getting somebody to watch the whole thing is hard because people have such a short attention span.
I can't remember the last time I watched an entire music video. I'm not joking.
Yeah, me either.
It just seems so like ingenuine, you know? It's like you can write 30 seconds of a song, throw it up on YouTube with you lip syncing to it, and it could get a million, you know, fucking likes.
It's so offensive. But here we are. I hate it.
Here we are spending our time and doing this, and then I got to go and make a video of me lip syncing that shit. I'm 34 years old.
Bro,
dude.
I'll never remember this. Exactly. When we put out Sucker, we spent like a lot of money on a music video. I don't know, probably like $5,000 or $6,000 on some video. It did good on YouTube or whatever, kind of. And then kinda. And then I shot a video on my phone of Andy singing in the studio, and that went like dummy, like,
fucking just, dummy. Yeah, see.
And it was just like, I remember thinking like, this is, it's all switching. Like, people, I think, are sick of the overhyped like facade of all of it, and they're kind of more interested in like people being real.
Yeah, our most, it seems like, liked content, even like on Instagram, wasn't like our necessarily our professional photos. It was like the phone photos that we had, or just like phone video, and like, how do you like portray more of a real life? But it's the same thing. It's like, dude, I'm, you know, 33, almost 34. I don't really want to become a fucking TikToker.
You know, it's not too late. It's not too late.
I know. I could do it. I do have a ring light. I'm pretty sure Strever stole it from me.
I haven't seen it
in a long time. No, but it's different. On the other side is like, anything can fucking happen with it. Like, the kind of cool thing about TikTok is, it doesn't really, it's not really relying on you to go viral with your own music. It just relies on somebody that, so anybody in the world can go viral with your music, and then that will change your life.
Which is kind of what happened away to us.
Yeah.
Like, we had this weird...
That's right. We did.
What was it? Whenever, like, TikTok started getting big enough that we were like, oh, I guess we have to make one. We make one. I just search, like, hashtag Ann Arbor, like, see what's going on. And I noticed that our song 18 just was, like, had gone viral on its own.
Somehow, some
way. Just through, I'm assuming, a bunch of 18-year-olds, you know, making videos with the song. And then all of a sudden, you know, that song just started skyrocketing and became our number one song on Spotify. Yeah. And I think brought us a lot of new fans. And then now that's become, you know, kind of a song that is solidified, kind of has to stay in the set.
Yeah.
You see what happened to, like, Beach Weather too. It's just like, yeah, they like weren't even a band anymore,
yeah, and then their song
was like number one.
Brought
like,
them back from the dead.
They were charting on literally like actual like the main rate, like pop radio. Uh-huh. They're charting on there, and you're just like, what the fuck? And like, you don't even have to do anything. And there's other, you know, countless stories of people like artists from the '90s that just
that one. They're working.
Yeah,
blew up that,
people like working regular ass jobs, and one day they're just like, oh shit, I'm making hundreds of thousands of dollars off some kids made a TikTok because they liked 30 seconds of a song I did. And it's like, there, that is what's cool about it, is like, anything can happen. It doesn't really rely on, this is new. It can be an old ass song. It can be anything. Where that doesn't really happen anywhere else in the music industry, where it's like, suddenly your song that's like 10 years old is gonna get popular, unless get it popular, like syncs randomly with something. But
it's wild. It's like the Wild West out there, dude. Anything's possible now. It's crazy.
It's even in between like album cycles, like I feel like the industry changes, where we like right now, we have no idea how things are like pitched anymore compared to what they were 2 years ago. It's just like, it's crazy. Not.
So yeah, I was on that. I was on the phone like a few weeks ago with one of our friends who's in a big band that we all know and stuff. And he was just telling me like, yeah, I was on the phone with blah, blah, blah from, you know, this other big band. And he was telling me, I don't even know where to put our marketing money anymore, because like, publicists aren't really, they don't know what to do. Like, the outlets that they're pitching to, like magazines and stuff, like that's not where people are looking. Everyone's online.
The algorithm everyone's is just owning on, like, everyone, dude.
Everyone's just on like TikTok and Instagram. So it's like, if that's, you know, it's just,
it's
like,
kind of sad, but yeah,
it's just,
I don't know.
I think we're about to go through another big shift. Like, personally, I really feel like there's a possibility that, I think there's a reason why long form podcasts have like become interesting to people. I think people do want long form stuff. And even though right now, like, people are like, yeah, no one has intention to spend all this stuff, I think albums will come back. I think albums are going to come back, and I think people are going to want like a body of work. You know what I mean?
I think maybe
I'm wrong, but I just feel like when you're like constantly cutting it all down, and it's
just losing quality.
Like you were saying, like, dude, there's artists that are out there that are like, whatever, doing good, but they're not really artists. They're just like, they're content creators.
Yeah, that's what it is.
They're not making meaningful, like, deep, you know, I spent time on this music.
Right.
And you know what? I guess it's totally subjective. Like, some people like that. So who am I to say it's not art? But totally. There's something to be said about spending a year on an album, or spending 2 years on an album, or
I think we've, you know, spent enough time now where everything has been so cut down, and everything's about, like, you know, 15 seconds to a minute video, and people are kind of starting to wake up to that fact that that's not bringing them joy, and it's just like this addictive model that
and I know, yeah.
sucks you in, and then you 4 hours have gone by and you're like, I don't remember anything I just looked at. And
yeah.
And the reason I say that too is because there's younger kids that I record at the studio that I'm surprised they're like into albums. Like they're listening to older albums from like, you know, the 70s or 80s and listening to it from front to back.
Front to
and
back.
They're like getting
wow.
into that. And wow. it's like, for me, I've always like looked back on my, like when I listen to an album, it will take me back to a certain time period of my life where yeah. I was listening to that album on repeat.
Yes.
Like when I hear Satanic Satanist by Portugal the Man, it brings me back to this really, like I just know where I am in that time period.
Yes.
I can know, I can like hear when I hear a song that's like on a playlist, if it's, cause I'll only listen to like albums like through, like I'll skip songs if it's like not my favorite song to get to, like there's a good chunk of four songs here or whatever, but I always listen to like albums. But like if I hear it on a playlist, I get to the end of it, I start hearing the next, like the intro yeah. of the next song of like, I know what's about to happen. Then yeah.
It's like, exciting.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like there's, it is a one whole thing, whether like you want it to be or not. But
yeah,
that's what music has always been. It's been fucking make an album that does this.
Yeah. Cause it feels like the whole culture of like just dropping singles randomly that have nothing to do with each other. It starts to feel like you're watching, you know, the fifth episode of Breaking Bad and then never watching another episode again. Like it's like music, I feel, is supposed to be like this big project, this body of work that is, you're either telling a story or you're just showing all these different emotions that are in, I don't know, one vibe that ties together.
Yeah. And
in that time, and when you're writing, whatever is going on is like kind of just forced its way into that chunk of yeah. art. And then the next time you do that is not going to be the same because obviously your life is different.
Yeah, and you're writing a different story.
So it's just the whole piece of work in itself, whether you understand or not. Like for me, I didn't understand that Deja Antenu was my favorite record until later on in life. It was because...
Brand new,
so yeah. Good. But it just all goes together and I would fall asleep to it. And then like later on when I got older, I was like, I love this record. Like this is by like this one.
The
of my
Devil
favorite
and
records.
God Are Raging Inside of Me is also an epic album.
Epic mm-hmm. record.
Dude,
yes.
It is so good.
Epic record. Yeah.
It's a really good record to be sad too.
It
yes,
is.
It is.
Dude, that album. So I think he wrote that album in a cabin by himself. He like from what I understand, he stayed like by himself for weeks in a cabin and wrote that album. I don't know if that's true, but if it is, that's tight.
That's pretty sick. That's pretty
there's something like cool about the lore of artists doing like weird shit to yeah. make albums. Like I really love Bon Iver, and there's this like really weird album that he has called 22 a Million that's like fucked up and just different than all of his other stuff, and that's the album that like I am obsessed with. That album, I think there was a tour where for some reason it was the only album I had downloaded on my phone and I had like no service. And so I just had to listen to only that album over and over and over again. But I remember hearing or reading a story. I have no idea if it's true, but it was like he's from Wisconsin. And he was in like a cabin in Eau Claire and just like stayed there for like a year. And it was just like cutting old tapes together and like taking Neil Young tapes and trashing it and then sampling that and just like experimenting. And the album is like very experimental and weird, but it like, it just is cool.
Yeah,
I've always wanted to do that myself. Just be like, oh, I just want to go fuck off for like 6 months and totally. See what
that'd
I do.
Be, that'd be
like,
dumb.
See what I can
I
come
think,
up with.
I think there's something exciting to taking big risks. And I think for artists or bands, a big risk is spending a lot of time on something without understanding if it's going to financially be what you think it will be.
Yeah.
But just taking the risk and be like, you know what? We're going all in.
Yeah.
Like, let's spend a ton of time on this and see where it can go. Cause there's just certain songs and albums that would not exist if that amount of time was put in. And then who knows? Like, you could be robbing yourself of something great if you just give it the time that it deserves.
Totally.
And I think that's one negative aspect of the quick, like, I'm dropping a single. Like, I know artists that go in the studio and they don't spend more than a max of like 2 hours on a song. And it's like, that's wild to me. It's just like
me. And
sometimes it's like, I can hear that. I can tell you know, finish that in 3 hours, including the mixing. And
yeah.
All
on the
stuff.
Other hand, like sometimes like some of our best songs, they came together in a day, you know,
totally.
It's like when it's hitting and it's clicking and everybody's on the same page. So I don't necessarily like, you know, I don't think it's necessarily bad the way that everything is. I think it's different for us and maybe more uncomfortable because just not what we got into this wanting to do. But I'm sure like it's so much more accessible where anybody can record themselves now and put it out, and that person can be on a fucking massive world tour the next week because their song just blew up, or you know, I mean, there's all this things. It's like, yeah, it's like the lottery almost of like, now you are competing against a million more people, and there is like this larger separation of who's making money, who's not, because there's just so many artists. But at the end of the day, it's like people are going to value, you know, people doing cool shit, I think. And the whole 1 minute sound clips, I think it is going to bounce back, like you said, and people are going to like kind of crave more of a heartfelt story and stuff, instead of being like, there was like a phase where it was just like, oh, have you seen this? This kid's 16. He's on fentanyl. Listen to his music. You know what I mean? It's just like everybody would send me something fentanyl the next rapper. Day. You're like, yeah, this kid is like a child and he's like fucked up. Listen to this one song. You're like, okay. And then you never hear anything about the person ever again. And
Well, because you still have to maintain that. Even if you have one song that just pops off, it's like you still have to write a lot more good songs to captivate an audience that wants to buy tickets to come see you.
And to maintain your career. I mean, if you want to be an artist, that's really what you want to do.
It's crazy. I saw a video of like Steve Lacy on his tour because his song blew up on TikTok, like massive.
Yeah, that song is huge.
And it's a great song. Yeah, but you see his crowds and they're dead his entire set. And then when he starts playing that song, they all put their phones up and start dancing and doing stuff. And you're just like, ooh, that's weird.
Yeah.
Because it just changes. Like live shows are so sacred to me. And like, that's my favorite. Yeah. Part of like my favorite things about music are one, being in the studio and recording and writing, and then the other side is just going to shows, playing live. But yeah, it's interesting. We'll see where it goes.
Just watch us all get duped by AI, man. I'm telling you.
Yeah.
Like there's going to be an artist that's got no face or something. And dude, I saw an app yesterday where you don't even have to sing. You just kind of give them your basic, you know, vocabulary, whatever you say, and it'll throw your voice into a song and it'll be your voice in a song. And it's like, how would I know the difference if that guy can sing or not? I don't know how legitimate anything is anymore. It's like, it's crazy.
Billie Eilish, Mac DeMarco, tons of like other big artists. I think James Blake, they all wrote this open letter to basically do it like a pushback against AI and music. I saw an article for it today, but apparently they're trying to get something signed or put into effect to where, you know, they'll start putting up restrictions, I guess, with like AI and music, because what it's doing is just taking stuff that's already out there and replicating it. So it is
flipping it some way,
in a way, an octave, in a way, theft. But it's like, I don't know, man. I think I have like strong opinions about a lot of that shit. But like, even like the whole like, and I know this has been popular with like rock, you know, like metal music back in the day, and like the whole like worshiping the devil stuff, like with Doja Cat and all that kind of stuff. I think that shit is so cheesy, and I think it's going to switch. And I feel like, I don't know, all the AI stuff, like how long is the AI thing going to be popular for? You know, like how long do human beings want to listen to something? Like, even if it sounds really good, I think a lot of people are going to be like, yeah, but it didn't come from an actual human.
Yeah, I hope so too,
but I feel like in a lot of ways, it just feels so weird and wrong.
You know, labels are just going to own your property, but they'll be like, hey, we'll give you $5 million right now, and then we just own your voice forever, and we'll forever put stuff out. And then, you know, if you're a young kid,
crazy,
you'll just be like, okay, I need $5 million. And then, but if you're a young kid, $5 million is not going to go very far when you get it and you're a rapper or whatever. It's just like, that's like the futures I see.
It's like, I don't want to hear an AI version of Andy singing. No. Like, I have zero interest in that, and I feel like it's wrong, and I just feel like, you know, I think the reason why, especially after what we've been through over the last year and a half, I think the reason why some music is so special is that you die. Like, I love listening to Jimi Hendrix knowing that, like, that happened, and now it's never going to happen again because he's dead.
Yeah, that's a good point.
And there's something... there's even human about that I think people like about music. It's like that timestamp of like that person existing and laying that down and singing, and you being able to listen to that. Like, that's why the music that we're sitting on with Andy is so meaningful.
Yeah. And bringing all the people together that your music, after all those, you know, after all so many years, has just brought so many people together because of you, because of whatever it is. It's crazy, man. Crazy thing about.
Yeah, I think the reason we listen to music in the first place or consume any kind of art is because you're looking for human connection. And there's not going to be that with a robot, because you want the reality, even the mistakes in a recording or the cracking in your voice or something like that, that you keep, is kind of what makes some songs the best.
Different cadences that singers have when they go high. Well, I know personally, Taking Back Sunday, when he would go all high and stuff, I would love it, right?
Yeah.
But like, AI is just going to throw it up there without his whatever it is. This is how he's consistent every time. It's like, you want that different feeling.
Dude, for sure. And like you just said earlier, you said that live shows are sacred for you. It's like, what it is human beings coming together.
Yeah.
And like the music, like when you're listening to music, even when you're alone and you're in your car, that human connection that you do feel with an artist that you really love, there's just something like...
Well, even DJs, it's like, if you go and see a cool DJ, like I saw Gesefelstein, I don't know how to pronounce his name.
Coachella.
At Coachella. And I was just like, I don't know, I'm not like really into electronic music, but you see a DJ and there's somebody up there, it's still a person making the crowd do it, and they picked the way the song's going. You know, it kind of adds to a thing. It's like, could you imagine walking into like a venue and it's a DJ and it's just the music just plays, and it's weird. It's like, you feel like you're at a restaurant or something.
Robots.
I think, I don't know, but who the fuck knows? Cause I mean, it's going to get better. I'm sure people are going to embrace it, and it's nothing that, like, you know, being old and bitching about it. Like, that's why I wonder sometimes, it's like, am I just old? And I'm just like,
I feel that way. I'm so jaded.
Yeah, no, it is. It will be interesting to watch it unfold and see what artists push back, which artists embrace it, how like kids react to it. It's going to get weird fast, dude.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's already getting really weird.
And like, I don't know. To me, though, there's something like, me and Ryan just made a new song with Mouse the other day, and Ryan played this like just beautiful guitar part on the acoustic.
Nice. Yeah. You're welcome. Nice.
Yeah, it's beautiful.
More absolutely beautiful than anything Danny's ever done.
Highly doubt that. Highly doubt that. Wrong. But no, we're in the studio. Mouse lays this like really emotional vocal part over this guitar, and it's just Mouse's vocals with a real wooden instrument, and it's like, you can't really creak her, like, you can't beat that.
Mm-mm.
It's so real, and then, like, you feel it here, and it's like, you know, I don't know.
Especially in that moment when he's just dropping it real quick, you know, just to like, you know, it's pretty cool.
So I don't know. I don't know how far we are from AI being able to like recreate that kind of feeling you feel in your soul. Like, that's going to be scary, I think, for me.
I think eventually it will have to get good enough. You know, like, we're in like, remember like 80s, like movie effects. Like, that's where we're at with AI. Mm-hmm. And then if you look at like video games, right now we're at fucking Atari level. Now video games, like, you can barely tell if it's like real or not. And so it's like, it's gonna happen.
Yeah.
And it's gonna change everything.
But I just don't know what we're all gonna do.
Yeah.
What are we gonna do? No, not even that. Like, if eventually AI is just gonna do everything.
Right.
And then it's also gonna do all the art. And then what do we do?
We go
do
fishing.
We just become the Wally people?
That's why Ryan's just been getting really good at fishing.
Yeah. Oh, okay. But they're going to fish better than you.
You fly fish too, right?
I love fly fishing, bro.
Hell yeah. Do you want to go sometime? Fish?
Yeah. I mean, I don't have my own rod. It's been a
I've
while.
I've got extra.
Yeah, I'd love to fly fish, dude.
Because I hit the canals and I go right now.
I see. I'm always looking at stuff, dude.
It's
fun. Like,
it's really fun. We can go.
Catching all the trout and stuff?
Yeah, I go for trout like once a month, twice a month.
Okay.
And then I hit the canals for carp, and it's really fun because they're like 40-pound fish in there.
Dude.
And they're like they're like right downtown Phoenix. I'll take you.
I live down there. Yeah, let's do it. That'd be fun.
I just lit up. Dude, it's really fun. Yeah, I saw you because you went to Alaska, right?
Yeah. So I'll go every once in a while to fish, but like,
you brought Keller back some fish, didn't you?
Yeah. Some fresh Alaskan fish, man.
He told me it was fire.
Yeah. But no, me and my dad will go to like New Mexico every once in a while. And
San Juan? Or?
And then like the Madison River in Montana, that's where I started fly fishing. So, I mean, whenever I can. Obviously, I'm a busy guy, but that'd be fun, dude.
Yeah, I like the in-town stuff because I can be like, oh, I'm just going to go for 2 hours and I can go about my day.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah,
so it's like I wake up and go hit it.
It's a quick spot.
Have
fun,
yeah. Yeah, cool. I'll take you for sure. That'll be fun. But sorry to derail.
Hey, Dan, what are you doing? What are you doing later today?
Fly fishing.
No, I'm stoked we got you guys on the pod, dude.
Yeah, that's a lot of fun.
What do you guys have coming up? What's currently going on? Like, what are you excited about?
We got this acoustic record that we're working on.
It's taking forever. It's my fault, but yes, we're working on that. We have one more song to finish and then we're done.
Yeah.
So that'll be coming out soon.
Mesa Music Festival on April 19th.
Yes.
It's going to be really fun.
Where's that? Mesa.
Mesa Music
outside
Festival.
Outside the Nile, I think.
Yeah.
Outside
it's like a whole festival in the downtown area. They have multiple stages, but I think we're playing at the Nile.
Cool.
Right.
Something like that. Yeah.
So.
Yeah, that's it for now, I guess.
Stay tuned for new Ann Arbor.
Where can people find Ann Arbor online?
At YouTube, Ann Arbor. Spotify, Amazon Music.
Everywhere. At Ann Arbor?
At Ann Arbor. TikTok.
Yeah. We'll put all Instagram, that stuff on.
Is TikTok still going? I
don't have it.
It's on.
It's still up. I thought they banned it or something. I don't know. Okay.
Yeah.
Maybe. We'll see. Maybe they'll ban it with the AI, dude.
No. It's here to stay, buddy. Sorry.
It's here to stay.
Give me my ring light back. All right. Thank you guys for coming through.
Yeah. Thank you guys for having us, man. Yeah.
Love y'all.
Love you.